Hence, any opposition between mysticism and ethics has no place here either. We think of the mythic, we think of the mystic, and then we think of the person who is driven by the ethical task. In Judaism, Beck is saying they are the same thing. You can't just fall into a kind of mystical trance and not care about the world. And you cannot care about the world without feeling a deep sense of religiosity and spirituality. Mystics and ethicists, or the mystical and the ethical, go together in Judaism. The religious consciousness here is never without that which has been commanded and still to be realized in life. No experience without tasks, and no task without experience. Life dwells only when both are present. In Judaism, all ethic has its mysticism, and all mysticism its ethics. This applies to the whole far-flung history of its ideas. For Jewish mysticism, the energies welling up out of God are energies of the will. Floods of mystery full of commandments and floods of commandments full of mystery issue from God. And the deed which fulfills God's commandments opens up a gate through which these floods surge into man's day. All absorption in the profundity of God is always also an absorption in the will of God and his commandment. And all Jewish ethics is distinguished by being an ethic of revelation, or one might also say an ethic of experience of the divine. It is the tidings of the divine. Every thou shalt is confronted with another word, which introduces it and simultaneously replies to it. Another word which is at the same time the word of mystery. Thus saith the Lord. Thou shalt, thus saith the Lord. The latter is the mystery. The former is, of course, the commandment. Ethics is here rooted in the profundity of human experience. And it is significant that the Hebrew language of the Middle Ages, the same word is used to designate an ethical disposition and a mystical absorption. The history of Judaism from ancient times to the present could be written as a history of mysticism. And the history of Judaism from its origins until now could also be written as a history of the law, and it would be the same history. And for the most part, it would be the history of the very same men. Many of the most influential and decisive teachers of the law have been mystics. For example, the author of the oft-cited Shulchan Aruch. What he's referring to in the last sentence is a man by the name of Joseph Caro, who lived in the 16th century, who indeed is a perfect blending of these two elements. On the one hand, he was the author of this important work, which became essentially the backbone of the Jewish law, namely the Shulchan Aruch, the ordered table. This becomes essentially the basic compendium of Jewish law for Jews up until this day. In other words, he is a legal scholar. At the same time, he writes a work called Magid Meisharim. A Magid is a person who is an angel or a spirit who speaks in his ear. And it is a kind of spiritual autobiography which he describes as mystical life. He describes being spoken to by a voice from heaven, so to speak, who captures his attention, who sends him into a mystical trance. Remarkable. A mystic and a person who is committed and grounded in Jewish law are the same. They go together. And I must add, having studied Jewish mysticism and 50 years after Beck's writing here, or even longer, how true this statement is, that indeed there is a relationship in Judaism between the mystical and the ethical. They are not apart. The mystic never loses control, never goes off in his own way into his own mystical experience, losing sight of the ethical task that remains. And of course, here now is, of course, the ultimate point, that this unique aspect of Judaism is not found in Christianity. We are back to the same issue that we confronted with Abraham Geiger and several other thinkers in this course, the need to define Judaism by putting down the other, in this case, the Christian other. So here is Beck on Paul. This is why Paul left Judaism, when he preached sola fide, by faith alone, and thereby wound up with sacrament and dogma. Mystery became everything for him, not only that which is concealed, but also that which is manifest. Hence, mystery finally had to become for him something tangible, namely sacraments, and something that can be molded, namely dogma. For it is always thus. Sacraments are a mystery into which man enters, a mystery of which man can take hold. And dogma, like myth, is a mystery which man can take hold. and dogma like myth is a mystery which man can build up and shape.